and the apparent complete destruction of civil life on the Gaza Strip, it says that ambition necessitates, is destroying more than the lives of the tens of thousands of captured Palestinians living in the besieged enclave across the Western nations allied with Israel's project. Draconian anti-democratic laws are being drafted forbidding demonstrating in support of the Palestinian people and their just resistance to the brutal occupation, while social media outlets cancel those in support and employers are pressured to fire people who attend rallies or exercise their rights to free speech online. The latter is just such a case where physician Dr. Ben Thompson was recently suspended by his employer, Ontario-based Mackenzie Richmond Hill Hospital, for, as they put it, social media posts that do not reflect our views or values as an organization. Tarek Labani is a London, Ontario-based doctor and humanitarian. Tarek runs the GLIA project, which seeks to provide medical supplies to impoverished locations, one of which is the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, where Tarek has practiced. Welcome to the program, Tarek.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, can you tell me, and our listeners, who exactly is Dr. Ben Thompson?
Dr. Ben Thompson is a humanitarian who has a long history of well over a decade of working on humanitarian causes across different places, countries like Uganda, obviously the Middle East and Gaza and the West Bank, where he has been making statements that have resulted in this harassment campaign against him. And then recently, he even started a project in 133 indigenous communities in northern Canada to ally with their medical programs and make sure that they had top-notch medical care. In short, Dr. Thompson is an exemplary human being who everybody likes and everybody thinks is brilliant, which is what makes this doubly ridiculous.
Well, I don't want to embarrass you, but like yourself, he's more than that, even in my view, just reading his short bio. He's something close to heroic, and a cancer survivor and organ donor to boot.
Yeah. I'm telling you, this guy is literally like if you were to write a protagonist who had nothing wrong with them, like that's him. And you're right, he is a cancer survivor. I was with him when he donated his kidney, and he donated his kidney because he wanted to make sure that other people had a chance, what's called an altruistic donation. Every donation is valuable. However, he didn't donate it to a friend or somebody he knew. He donated it so that he could start a chain of people who could donate to each other and be valuable. So I generally try to shy away from language like heroic, but I think it's appropriate in Ben's case.
Yeah, Ben, I'm looking at his Twitter feed. There's nothing in it after October 13th. So I'm assuming then that his legal representation has told him just to not say anything. So we have effectively already is a very credible professional Canadian with intimate knowledge of the area, the region, and especially now in light of the bombings of hospitals, which has been going on. And you can talk a little bit, having been in Gaza many times yourself, about how those hospitals are targeted. It's not a controversial assertion to make. So now he's been silenced. That voice has been effectively silenced. I'm not talking to him today because he doesn't want to break that silence for legal reasons. Now, when you say that you're not speaking for him, what can you tell us then that is authoritative but not legally compromising about the case?
Well, you're right. Ben himself is not speaking at all right now. I'm not privy to what his lawyers have told him. He hasn't asked me and he hasn't told me and I haven't asked him. When I do engage with him, it's purely as a friend to support another friend in a time of catastrophe. And so he is, you know, I think it's probably fair to say, and not outside the bounds of my relationship with him, to tell you that the man is suffering. You know, he lost his job and he was put out of his home because of these threats. And as such, he's suffering just like any of us would be in a similar situation. In terms of the facts as we know them, well, basically, he was dismissed from his position. He was suspended from his position because of what happened. In terms of his speech, he was talking about the basic human rights of Palestinians I love Ben. Ben is fantastic. Ben is not a radical. Ben was not talking about radical things. He probably would be like on the right end of your guests on this program. What he was talking about was the most milquetoast assertions. For example, he was fact-checking the debunked claims that Palestinians beheaded 40 babies. This claim, I mean, our friends in the Jewish community understand claims like this. They're meant to dehumanize. They're claims that are said without assertion to create a pretext for dehumanization and to create a pretext for attacks. That's what those claims are about. They're not about truth. And if they were about truth, then the organizations that would have perpetrated these claims would have been relieved that they were debunked. Thank God there haven't been 50 babies who have been beheaded. Yeah. That's something that's good for all of us. None of these groups have retracted their claims. None of these groups have apologized. None of these groups have sort of expressed how happy they are that this misinformation turned out to be untrue. And that tells us that it is being used as misinformation. It probably was known or suspected to be misinformation early. And as a result, really, we can say that its purpose is dehumanization. Now, the hospital asserts that they dismissed him because of the safety risk.
This is McKenzie Health now, where he works. Yeah.
Yeah, McKenzie Health. So they basically say, hey, look, you know, because you said something, there were death threats. And because there are death threats, you created an unsafe work environment and you have to be suspended. Wow.
Well, this is similar. Sorry, to the Ontario NDP representative Sarah Jama, who the things that she was saying on social media elicited threats, and the party says, "Oh, well, your presence poses a danger to your colleagues, and so you have to go." From threats made from some anonymous thugs.
There's clearly a template for harassment of people who are speaking about Palestinian human rights. These people are not creative. And so, yeah, you're telling me that the same template is being copied and pasted from Dr. Ben Thompson to Sarah Jama? Yeah, I believe that. And clearly this language of safety is also, because of its subjectivity, a very, very difficult one to fight against and a very easy one to weaponize. But what they've done in both of those cases, I can't speak about the Sarah Jama case because I don't know it well enough, but I can speak about the Ben Thompson case. What they're doing here is they are creating a pretext for or a procedural pretext for removing somebody from his job because of the actions of somebody else. So, you know, they're victim blaming. I mean, Dr. Ben Thompson was basically put in a situation where his life was threatened and where he was the victim of harassment. The response from a hospital is not to then dismiss him, to suspend him, to cut off his income source, and to make sure that he had no support professionally or personally. The response of the hospital should be exactly what the Jewish General Hospital did when there were threats to their staff. There were threats to the staff of the Jewish General, and the hospital responded by upping security and by making sure that all of the doctors there had all of the resources they needed so that the threats against them wouldn't translate into them feeling unsupported or not have what they needed. And very appropriately, of course, all of us in the medical community rallied around that hospital to say, hey, what do you need? What exactly can we do to help? And in so doing, we created an environment in which our colleagues feel supported and in which our colleagues don't feel re-victimized by our indifference, or in this case, not even indifference, but literal like re-victimization.
Yeah, and where this kind of precedent leads, who knows? I mean, you could somebody that is determined to do so could shut down any number of civic infrastructure projects and operations and target people they just don't like. In this case, the hospital recorded the threat that came in by telephone. I'll read it. When you said that these people aren't creative, well, then this will accentuate that point. Quote, "It is disgusting. You are a disgusting human being. You do not know what you're saying. And if you do not remove it," I suppose this is the post he's talking about, "I advise you and the rest of your staff to stay out of your office." So for this threat, I don't know if there was more than one. This is the one. This is I'm reading off of an article the CBC put up. Ontario doctor suspended, his address published. He was doxxed as well after pro-Palestinian social media posts that from October 20th. So basically what we're having is again, thuggish behavior being rewarded by having the desired effect in making an example of Ben Thompson, but also of depriving him of his employment. And you say that his residence, he was scared enough that he had to go into hiding. Is that what you're saying, Tarek?
Yeah, that is true. And I mean, it was the police who told him he had to go into hiding because they judged the threat, that particular threat against him personally, to be credible. So we know that there are needs here. And, you know, the death threat, I don't know how many death threats there are. I don't know where the CBC got the audio of that particular death threat. But what that tells you is that there's a lot of people who are upset about this. You know, people have been contacting me from inside the administration of this hospital because I had published this thread about it on social media, which might be where you had heard about this story as well, Chris. Mm-hmm. And what they've been sort of saying is we totally disagree. This was a egregious abuse of power. Suspensions do not come that quickly. Suspensions do not come from one person. You know, these are processes that are so well established in medicine that we all understand them. Even if you've never been suspended, which the majority of doctors haven't, even if, you know, you've never been directly part of the process, we all know that these processes take time. We all know that the only things that result in sudden death suspensions are basically if somebody's found to have murdered somebody, somebody's found to have raped somebody, something deeply criminal. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing criminal about advocating for human rights. And I think the CEO keeps saying to people in the hospital, keeps commenting, you know, the CEO is talking to a lot of mad doctors too, who are reporting back what he's saying. And what he keeps saying to them is, look, this was a safety risk. We had to do this. He forced my hand. How exactly did this doctor force anybody's hand into anything? Like, if I talk about Palestinian human rights, am I forcing people to threaten me? I mean, it takes so much agency from the harassment campaigns. You know, you talked about the goons who called in the threat. Sure, those were goons, but those goons were basically rockets fired by people who were far away from it, who can deny involvement, who know or should have known what their harassment campaign was going to lead to. You know, when you use inflammatory language accusing somebody of being a Holocaust denier, you know, that's language that makes it so that people aren't necessarily thinking rationally, and it's predictable that they're going to get mad and impassioned. It's predictable that they're going to form a mob and try to lynch this person. You know, that's kind of how it works with these sorts of harassment campaigns. So him saying this kind of stuff, it holds no water at all. You know, they didn't try, I don't know the exact details, but they didn't try at all to work with them. They didn't tell him, okay, well, listen, you know, let's talk about this. They went to literally the most grave available, quote, remedy that's available to a hospital. A hospital can't do anything worse to a doctor than suspend him or her or them, I guess. You know, they can do nothing worse to a doctor than a suspension. And they did that to him. And so I ask you and your listeners to go through a mental or hypothetical exercise. Ben, the people who were sort of talking about him, said some vile things about Palestinians, advocating genocide, dehumanization. You know, they deserve this, that, and the other thing in terms of war crimes. People said vile things. The hospital has not tried to suspend any of them. Okay. If there were death threats against these people, can any of us imagine an advocate for the Israeli genocide of Palestinians being suspended? I mean, let's be honest, none of us can. If we were talking about other issues, let's talk about BLM, or let's talk about virtually any other salient human rights issue of our time. Can we imagine Dr. Ben Thompson being suspended for his views supporting those movements? No. I mean, the issue around Israel is special because there are concerted, organized harassment campaigns that target anybody who speaks out about Israel. And these campaigns are vitriolic and, as we can see, are illegal. They involve death threats. So that for then the hospital to turn around and say this had nothing to do with his speech, it's instantly not a credible statement. It's obvious that it's a lie.
Yeah. Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Tarek Loubani. Tarek is a London-based, London, Ontario-based doctor and humanitarian. He runs the GLIA Project, and that project seeks to provide medical supplies to impoverished locations, one of which is the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza. I want to talk about that in a second. Tarek, you asked, you said you didn't know how the CBC, this article that I'm looking at, by Brishti Basu, Ontario doctor suspended his address published after pro-Palestinian social media posts. That's at CBC News Online, October 20th is its byline. And it says that the hospital itself shared that recording that I quoted earlier on. And when you say, they also, in that article, though, they show the tweet that seems to have caused so much rancor, at least a severe amount among one person anyway. And I'll read that too. Ben Thompson in his tweet says, quote, "No babies were beheaded. There have been no confirmed reports of rapes. You repeat this nonsense out of racism. In the meantime, Palestinians are experiencing genocide and war crimes, and you are silent. History will judge you very badly." I'm not sure who he was responding to in that, but that elicited from one of his colleagues at the hospital, and you mentioned this, Tarek, Gil Nimni, MD, says, quote, "I guess he is also saying that 6 million didn't die at the hands of the Nazis." And then goes on to say further ridiculous things, you know. I mean, that sort of sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, and what's happening there, Dr. Gil Nimni, who by all accounts is a lovely person, has been...
He sounds lovely.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious when I say that. I asked about him, Chris. He's a nice person. But having said that, you know, this tells us something about the power of the propaganda, because what you have to do in order to launch such a massive genocide against a people who are already occupied and captive, you have to convince people like Dr. Gil Nimni that they are worth it, that they are worth the genocide. And as such, what's happened there is that Dr. Gil Nimni, this otherwise lovely person who I don't know much about his personal life, but probably has, you know, a partner he loves and children who he adores. You know, this doctor ends up in a position where he sees fact-checking and truth-telling and the attempt to de-escalate as instead Holocaust denialism. And that's not because Dr. Gil Nimni came up with these ideas. That's because the propaganda is so strong. Like, remember that Dr. Gil Nimni was responding to the president of the United States, you know, and most of these people, they're not as engaged with the disinformation as you and I. And so they end up in positions where they are forced to sort of accept these higher authorities. And here, and in fact, this was in one of the statements that was made to Dr. Thompson, somebody said, "Well, who am I going to trust, you or President Joe Biden?" I mean, these guys don't know what happened in Iraq so much. They don't know kind of what's going on in the world around them so much. They are victims. The fact that they are perpetrators of misinformation doesn't reduce the fact that they're also victims. So I think that we can recognize that Dr. Gil Nimni did something very wrong, and he was a perpetrator of a vile act. of accusing Dr. Ben Thompson of Holocaust denialism, but also that stems from him being weaponized himself by this propaganda. You know, they charged him and weaponized him, and that's what these campaigns do. And we have to keep that in mind as we're approaching the purveyors of misinformation, that very often they're also the victims of it.
Well, you're a much kinder and more understanding person than I am, for sure, Tarek, because I think I reflected my thinking on that in a short sentence, as unkind as that might be. But we have to be, especially now, we all must be not so credulous to accept, especially from politicians, everything that we've heard. And there is countering information available, people, that, you know, you don't have to trust what the Pentagon tells you or whatever. There is other sources of information available. Just that being said, so now
I want to say, Chris, just before you move on to your next point, I totally agree with you. You know, I think for me, I developed this particular approach largely based on the COVID misinformation that's out there. And I transited from being like deeply sort of antagonistic to people who pervade the information and seeing them as perpetrators alone into this perspective of seeing them as both victims and perpetrators and trying to understand it that way. And I found it more useful in combating the misinformation, because when I have that model, I start with the perspective that, like, listen, you're a victim too. Let's work out why you have such tension that you need to believe that Palestinians aren't humans.
There are babies being beheaded, hundreds by high explosives, having all of their parts removed in an instant. The last couple of days in Gaza have been some of the most intense aerial bombardment. I haven't seen figures, but on just how much munitions have been dropped on the heads of people that are, you know, have really very nowhere to run, where they're not in danger. That is continuing. I mentioned earlier that you're attached to the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, Tarek. Have you heard, is it still standing?
Yes, Al-Shifa is still up. It's had its environs bombed, and lots of people obviously are scared that eventually Al-Shifa's courtyard and maybe even the main buildings will be bombed. But Al-Shifa, as it stands right now, still exists. Now, the reason why we're worried about it is because Al-Shifa has been bombed in the past. And so it's received rockets, not direct to the emergency area, but to other places. Other hospitals have received shelling or rockets to the main areas, including Indonesian Hospital not too long ago. And of course, all of these centers that we're hearing about now getting hit directly and indirectly. I mean, Wafa Hospital was literally ground into dust after being given, I think it was 24 hours to evacuate. And then the Israelis just pummeled it with artillery shells until there was no Wafa Hospital anymore. So these are things that people know can happen, which is why people are terrified that they will happen again. And of course, what happened in Al-Ahli Hospital, I think put an exclamation mark on people's fears that the Israelis were willing to do this.
Well, clearly they are willing, and it's not just this year, but in past years, as you said, these hospitals have been attacked. Medics have been attacked. Ambulances have been attacked. And you yourself, during the Great March of Return, experienced this as well, being shot by Israeli snipers while you were in your green scrubs, as I recall the story. Why people in the press over here and in the government would think that anybody but Israel destroyed partially destroyed the Al-Ahli Hospital with such a huge loss of life and so many injuries is beyond me. But that when you talk about propaganda, that is still persisting in the houses of parliament and in the state houses and in the presses here in the West, where they're saying, oh, no, the Israel didn't do this. Because I suppose when the Israeli government saw the global disgust focused on they and their actions, they decided that this is one that they couldn't admit, but in the meantime, they're still issuing warnings to other hospitals to clear out, because or else.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Israel has a history of lying, and that's not news to anybody who's involved in these issues. So I think that it's pretty evident and clear that whether or not Israel did this, Israel definitely could have done this. And unfortunately, we can't trust any of Israel's denials, because they'll deny even when it's obvious that they have acted, or when they have obviously done something, even when it's clear they have information that they did something. And if the Israelis were genuinely interested in discovering the truth here, and to me, it's pretty apparent that they're not in this case, then they would open up their records for independent investigation. They would pause for a minute and allow independent investigators to collect evidence. You know, when most people are falsely accused, they're very welcoming of investigations, because investigations will vindicate them by and large. And in a case like this, why is it, if the Palestinians are the ones who launched this, why are the Palestinians asking for independent investigations? And why are the Israelis saying no? So I think when you look at the history is of multiple attacks, you know, dozens of attacks over decades. The record on lying, of course, including very recently with Shirina Bakla, and even with my own case, when I was shot, the Israelis denied shooting me. And then they started saying, well, it was probably a Palestinian who shot him, even though the injury pattern was very clearly one where it came from where the wall was. Like, what, was a Palestinian hiding under an Israeli to shoot me? I mean, it was on the face of it ridiculous, but that was the position the Israelis took. And then when the Canadian government asked for an independent investigation, of course, none was forthcoming. I think the reality here is that the purpose of these denials isn't to avoid the ultimate conclusion that Israel did it, but to jam the wheels. And I think with Al Ahli Hospital, there was a real possibility, a very real possibility, that world opinion was about to turn. And that's what got jammed through this confusion and obfuscation that the Israelis engaged in.
Baffle gab and blatherskite. Tarek, we're out of time. Tell me before we go about the GLIA project, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, first of all.
Yeah, no, you're pronouncing it right. The GLIA project looks on the face of it like it's about 3D printing medical equipment. It's not. It's about making sure that any place that is low resource or needs medical equipment has the indigenous capacity to make its own, that they're not under the control of other parties. Now, what does that mean in Gaza? That means the Israelis. But in other parts of the world, there are also parties that are not interested in making medical healthcare accessible. For example, one of our very healthy sort of pieces of work and projects is in the United States, because there also, through the use of copyright and patent law, there's an attempt to suppress medical devices so that regular people aren't able to access them. In the case of Palestine, obviously, it's just that the Israelis literally block all medical equipment. So even if you have $1 million, you can't buy very simple medical equipment. As we're seeing right now, it's not a money problem. All the world wants to help Gaza, and yet we can't because the Israelis veto that access. So GLIA is about independence. It's about providing medical care to the poorest people and the lowest resource people in a way that doesn't need others to say yes.
Well, I'm looking at the website. It's glia.org. That's GLIA.org. You can help them in their efforts. I'm looking at the people involved, and they all look like yourself, to be kind and very good-hearted people, not so quick to judge as perhaps radio interviewers might be. Thanks a lot, Tarek, for coming on, and do keep me updated with, if you would, with the progress in Ben's case. And I know you grew up in Gaza, and you've been there, as I said, many times, working with the hospital there and in the field. And I know you must really be heartbroken at this moment right now. But we can only hope that this is the beginning of a better day somehow, eh?
I can only hope so, too. I mean, without the optimism, we don't have anything, at least without the hope.
Well, thanks again, Tarek.
Thank you so much for having me.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. At guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago. Jakarta. Helsinki.